All right, good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. We have a great program lined up for you over the next 2 hours. I've got some sports therapy that I'm going to offer to Ryan Hickey, and in return, he tells me he's going to offer us maybe the best start bench cut that we've ever had on the program. That is very exciting. Drew Brees, I got to find a space to get this into the show. We have a lot going on today in just 2 hours to get into it. Drew Brees posited over on ESPN a really interesting theory, a very specific theory with a very specific number attached to it for how to evaluate, assess, find, develop quarterback talent. And I want to just unpack that if we have time. Tony Gwynn Jr., our friend, former major leaguer, Padres analyst, will be on the show. We'll do buy or sell, as we always do. Your phone calls, 888-710-4ISN. Lots of things to get into. But I want to start with not just last night's dazzling gem by one of the Dodgers' handful, it feels like, of aces. Yoshinobu Yamamoto was ridiculous yesterday. Dodgers take a 2-0 series lead in the NLCS over the Milwaukee Brewers. And here's a little bit of wrinkle, a little interesting factoid. We've got two different teams, Mariners over on the American League side, who started this series on the road, who are up 2-0 as they go back home. In the history of Major League Baseball, in the situations where we've had a 2-3-2 format, that's what we have. Only three teams have been able to come back and turn around the deficit that the Brewers and the Blue Jays find themselves in. And so for the Dodgers, you've got a chance at a back-to-back. You've got a stranglehold on the series. I don't want to sleep on how amazing Yamamoto was. He was incredible. The three hits, one run, seven strikeouts, one base on ball, complete game, doesn't just remind us that if your bullpen is an issue, and in theory it is for the Dodgers, that if that's the problem, just don't go to the bullpen. It's a reinforcement of how much depth and excellence money helps with this, and they have a great front office, just how good this Dodgers team is. And the one run is a bit, I'm not sure it's a misnomer, but just to put in perspective, if you missed the game, Yamamoto takes the mound, there's all this energy, it's only 1-0 when the game starts, right? Brewers fans are like, we can do this! They had almost a pep rally before the game, we got this! And on the very first pitch of the game, home run, 1-0 Brewers. And from that moment on, after his first pitch, Yamamoto gave up no runs, two hits, and mowed down Milwaukee. Here's the thing, and this is Jeff Passan. Jeff Passan, the outstanding Major League Baseball insider for ESPN, a guy that I sort of know professionally because we just missed each other at the Kansas City Star back in our newspaper writing days. Passan's got a great theory, not even a theory, he's got a reported article, it's not a theory, that I'm going to talk about here. And much of what I'm going to discuss comes from Jeff Passan, so credit Jeff Passan here. Passan pointed out, and it really struck me in the game yesterday, that the stakes for Dodgers Brewers isn't just who goes to the World Series and potentially wins that thing, although that's huge in L.A., that's huge in Milwaukee. The stakes are potentially whether or not there's baseball in 2027, and that is a big deal. For me, it's bigger than that. I'm going to take what Jeff reported, and I'm just going to enhance it a little bit and say it's not just whether there's baseball in 27, it's what kind of baseball you and I are going to be watching in 27 and 28 and 30 and 33. What kind of baseball is going to take place and what kind of teams can compete going forward? Jeff's point is this, and I think it's a really good one and a really interesting one, that there's already, according to Passan, who I don't think there's a more connected, impressive person covering Major League Baseball. He's the Schefter of baseball. And I think Passan's earned, through a career of excellence and accuracy, when he writes these things, when he reports these things, he gets in a way that, I guess, Woj did, in a way that I think Schefter does. Few reporters do. It's true. We know that it's true. Passan's, it's not theory, his reporting is that there's already a groundswell of frustration and anger out there from Major League Baseball owners that the Dodgers are able to spend their way. And Dodgers fans, I know that Andrew Friedman is a freaking genius and it's not just the money, but that they're able to spend their way on top of how well-run they are to utter and total dominance. And now up 2-0 on the Brewers, the Dodgers on the verge of back-to-back World Series and a run that feels like almost impossible to put a stop to because of their financial resources. And so Passan's theory is, if the Dodgers win this World Series, against a smaller market Brewers team that's usually in the bottom third of payroll. The Dodgers are the highest payroll in the history of baseball. If you include the luxury tax, the Dodgers have over $500 million in salary this year. That is more than the bottom six teams combined in Major League Baseball. I'm going to give you some more stats in a second. And Jeff's theory is, his approach, his belief, his reported concern is that if the Dodgers win the World Series, it is going to be the final straw for frustrated owners and give enough weight to the idea that this system doesn't work that they're going to say a year from December when the CBA expires, so basically 2027 season, to hell with it, lockout time, we need a salary cap. And if they do that, if they put their foot down and they say, got to be a salary cap because the Dodgers can't be stopped, and the Dodgers can't be stopped because money is the dominant force now, and there's just not any level of even approaching parity, even by the non-parity standards of baseball, then you got to root, if you depending on what you want, you got to root for or against the Dodgers, depending on what you're after. And reading Passan's story, and the other theory works too, right? The other approach. I had randomly bumped into a young dude yesterday who played catcher in college, just got out of college, didn't quite make it to the minors. And we had this exact argument before I read the Passan story in its entirety where he said, no, there's parity. Like, if you look at all the teams that are out there and the Brewers are in it and they're 17th in payroll and blah, blah, and the Mariners aren't very much that high and blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. If the Brewers find a way to come back and win this thing, which doesn't look likely, but whatever, miracles happen. See the Red Sox back in the day. It can happen. Then there's going to be a counter-argument that could be said, well, I mean, the Dodgers spent $500 million and blah, 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 but who cares? The Brewers got it done. The battle between the Dodgers and the Brewers isn't just who goes to the World Series. It's what argument among the owners and among the Players Association wins out and has weight and carries the day when they figure out how they're going to structure baseball 2 years from now and whether or not the attempt to structure it that way leads to a lockout. And so when you look at Dodgers-Brewers, you need to not be rooting for which team you like more, which team you hate more. You have to root for the version of baseball that you want. Now, for me, I want a salary cap. I think it's important for baseball. I respectfully roll my eyes at players and people and former athletes and current fans who say, nah, there's parity, man. Look at how many teams have made and the Brewers are in it. No. It's a cute little story. The little engine that could sometimes does, but every year the Dodgers are guaranteed, almost without fail, to be in the playoffs and probably be in the NLCS because of the money they spent. And if the Yankees ever took their money and combined it with the GM that knew what he was doing, they'd be in the exact same position as well. So for me, I'm actually counterintuitively rooting. I'd rather have Milwaukee win. I like small markets. I don't mind rooting against a team that knocked out my Cubs, but I'm rooting for the Dodgers because I think it's best for baseball. I want the Dodgers to dominate. I want the obnoxiousness to continue. I want this to be a team that nobody can beat and for it to be realized, even if, yes, it leads to a lockout. And I know a lot of you don't want a lockout. A lot of you are like, Ryder, you're full of it. I don't care. I don't want to miss baseball. I want to watch my team. Then root for the Brewers. Hope the Brewers come out, get to that Dodgers bullpen in L.A. That bullpen is a huge weakness, I think, but I'm not sure that the Dodgers starting pitchers at some point will cool off. I don't know if you know this, just fun fact. Dodgers starters in the last 30 games, last 30 starts, which is a product not just of the money they spend, though that's a big part of it. It's also a product of how great of a talent evaluator Andrew Friedman is. That is real. They dominate the draft. They also dominate signing in Latin America, and you may not, just to get into the weeds here, MLB's draft is not like, say, the NBA draft, where it's international. It's only American players. If you want to sign a player from Cuba or Venezuela or anywhere else, you just have to outspend the other team. And so if you have massive amounts of money, which the Dodgers do, and the game has become massively more international, which it has, it's not just about I can go offer Freddie Freeman a gabillion dollars. It's I have an advantage with players from Japan, like the guy that pitched last night. I have an advantage with guys that are coming out of Cuba. I have an advantage out of guys coming out of Venezuela. It's a huge advantage, which is part of the reason, big part of the reason, they do everything well, that in their last 30 starts, Dodger starters are, this includes the playoffs and goes into the regular season, 15-1 with a 1.49 earned run average. Opposing teams, playoff teams, by the way, are batting 144 against them over that stretch. Their whip, fantasy baseball players know what this is, it's basically walks and hits divided by innings pitched. Anything that's 1.0 is elite level. Oh my God, how did you do that? Is 0.81. They've struck out 214 batters, Dodger starters. In this series, for the Brewers have 4 hits. To quote Harry Doyle from Major League, 4 hits in 2 games. We've got 4 bleeping hits. You can't say bleeping on the air. Well, people are listening, which is why I went bleeping. Look, Passan's article is really on point and really, really smart. Because this Dodgers machine is almost impossible to stop. And this idea, this hope that maybe they'd figure out the people would get to the bullpen, it misses the fact that year after year after year after year after year, the Dodgers just go out there and they sign whoever the hell they need to. Yamamoto, who was amazing last night, and it's his second year in L.A., and so it's easy to kind of lose track of the ridiculousness of what they're able to spend money on because it happens so often and so frequently that one signing just overwhelms the next. But just to give you some perspective, when he came out of Japan, he got $325 million over 12 years. I'm good at math. That's $32.5 million a year. But to put in perspective, they gave him a signing bonus up front of that $325, $50 million, like here's $50 million right now. And when you sign a player from Japan, you have to sign what's called a posting fee. That's what happens in soccer. You're going to pay the team in Japan basically the right to take him. They gave that team $50 million. So the Dodgers 2 years ago, in one lump sum, just to get this guy under contract for 12 years and another $275 million, gave $100 million. That is more than 5 teams in baseball spent on their rosters this year, and more than 7 did when that transaction went down. And that's just one guy. This is an organization that has been able to, because of the money, to go out and get Mookie Betts, who won an MVP. To get Shohei Ohtani, who had won 2 and was obviously the best player maybe in the history of the sport. He's now won 3. They went out and they got Freddie Freeman. Tyler Glasnow has never even won a Cy Young. It's amazing they brought him in at all. Just kidding. He's amazing too. And this is a team that spent so much money, they're able to just bring in Trey Turner and be like, actually it didn't work out. Have fun wherever the hell you want to go next. Enjoy Philly. They moved on from Corey Seager, who helped the Rangers win a World Series, and it didn't matter or affect them at all. And so those are the stakes that are playing out right now in Major League Baseball. Those are the stakes that Passan walked us through. As you watch Dodgers Brewers, you have to put aside who you actually want to win and root for the version of baseball that you're interested in. If you're the Yankees, if you're a Yankees fan, and a Cubs fan, frankly, although I don't want this, I think it's bad for the game, it's counterintuitive, you really need the Padres to win this series and come back and win. Or maybe root for the Mariners if they get there. Although the Mariners have spent some money, but still, they're not a big market. They haven't had a lot of success. You can sell this idea of, look, the Brewers beat the Dodgers. Therefore, small markets can compete. Let's just keep this system going. And if you are the Kansas City Royals, if you're the Pirates, if you're any of these organizations that haven't been able to cut through, to burst through, to break through, to compete consistently, I know it sounds, you got to root for the Dodgers. And you don't just want the Dodgers to win. You want the Dodgers to do what they've been doing. You want them to dominate Milwaukee. You want them to humiliate them. You want the Brewers to wake up and have 7 hits when the series is over. So it's so galling, the gulf between these two teams, the money between these teams. And it's possible, by the way. The Dodgers and all their cash are hitting the zone at the exact same time. They're in that crazy rhythm. Even Dave Roberts. Now, Dave Roberts, I'm going to play this for you. I wish there could be a ka-ching sign, like a money sign, because it's not as if these guys figured out how to suddenly play baseball. They've spent $500 million on this team, and that $500 million, as Roberts pointed out yesterday, is coming to its own at the exact time that high-priced talent is supposed to.
Our entire team is playing the best baseball we've played all year. The focus, the concentration level is at the highest, and you know we're peaking at the right time.
And they are. Look, Blake Snell, I'm not even sure who had a better outing, Yamamoto or Snell. Yamamoto won a complete game, gave up 1 run, was untouchable after basically the first pitch of the game. Took him 1 pitch to settle in. 5-1 Dodgers win, by the way. I'm not even getting into the fact that Shohei Ohtani had an RBI single. That guy makes like $1 billion. Max Muncy hit another home run. I believe he set the record yesterday for postseason home runs for Dodgers. Max Muncy would be one of the best players on any roster in baseball, or one of the most highly coveted players if there was a free agency opportunity, is a better way to say it. He's just a guy for the Dodgers, a guy hitting critical home runs. Corey Seager and Trey Turner are potentially, and they were in Seager's case, that he was, franchise-shifting signings. They're guys the Dodgers move on from because, you know what the Dodgers are? They're Leonardo DiCaprio. They break up with supermodels to date younger, hotter supermodels. Anyone else on Earth would go, how can you break up with her? But in this case, like, I kind of see it. Are you bringing in Shohei? You're bringing in Freddie Freeman? You're going to get Blake Snell? All right. Guess you got to move on. I understand. I don't want that to be baseball. And by the way, if the Dodgers were in Tampa Bay or Kansas City, they'd be the Milwaukee Brewers. How do I know? Because Andrew Friedman did it in Tampa Bay. That's the brilliance of L.A. and the lack of brilliance from the Steinbrenner family. The Dodgers always spent a bunch of money. Then 10 years ago, they went and they hired the best baseball executive in the sport who had dominated with no resources and gave him resources. So they perfectly, L.A., encapsulate the problem with money in this sport, that when you have utter competence and utter cash, they're not beatable. And they're just going to get better and better and better. A lot of people think they're going to get Tyle Tucker in this offseason. A lot of people think they're going to get Tarik Skubal in 2 seasons. Paul Skeens is available in 3 seasons. You may think it's crazy. Nah, they'll stop. They're not going to stop. They're going to keep spending and spending and spending. There is no way to stop these guys unless the system changes. So as you're watching this series, it's been really fun. It's been the whole postseason has been amazing. And I'll give you, I will cede to you that Mariners Brewers would be absolutely incredible. Like the drama, the excitement. Cursed is the wrong word, but two smaller markets that are for their fans who are incredibly passionate and smart baseball fans. I don't want it. I can't believe I'm saying this because I was over it, but passing changed my mind. I want the Dodgers to not lose another game. I want their pitchers to stay in the zone because I want the owners to find the backbone and the spine. And that's hard. They're a bunch of cowards. I want them to find the spine to selfishly, because there's no good guys, owners versus players. Players Association wants this. Owners want this. It is billionaires arguing with 100 millionaires. But I'll root for the side that's in my best interest, and that's the owners putting their foot down, creating a salary cap. You can have a salary floor. I don't need to get into the details with you. There's ways to structure it so that teams like Pittsburgh are forced to support generational talents when they happen to draft them, and teams like the Dodgers, and they'll be fine, folks, can exist on their baseball excellence, and there'll still be an advantage, right? It's not going to be everyone has to spend $500 million. It'll be a floor and a cap, but I want to squeeze the edges a little bit. And before you tell me, the Brewers can do it, the Brewers would do it, not could do it, if the system were different. The Brewers can do it. It's not the same thing as the Brewers have done it or will do it. Maybe I'm in the wrong alternate hit. I don't remember the Brewers winning 2 World Series in the last 7 years. Do you? I don't remember that. What the Brewers have done is remarkable, but this is an almost in terms of what we celebrate as fans. So give me the Dodgers dominating Milwaukee. Sorry, Milwaukee, you're the sacrificial lamb to the bigger and better cause. Because I want, even if it means a lockout 2 years from now, a year and a half from now, I want Major League Baseball to go to war with the players and create a system where everybody can win. Or where this crap stops happening. And I don't hate the Dodgers. I hate what they represent. And that means I have to root for them, which is weird. 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN. I'm here for pushback. You think I'm full of it. You think there's parody. I'll ask Tony Gwynn Jr. A lot of baseball people are down on this. There's parody. There's the illusion of parody. There's the illusion of parody for me. All right, but I want your take. 888, let's give you mine. 888-710-4ISN. We're going to talk a little more baseball. I'm going to try to get into this Drew Brees quarterback theory, and I'm 100% going to emotionally fix the broken Penn State heart of Ryan Hickey. That's next here. Sports Therapy next. I'm Righter Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
My heart's still in Paris. Oui, je ne la parle pas. Napa.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
That's not real French, by the way. What's up, Bill Ryder with you? Thanks for hanging. I was just talking about, if you're just joining us, that I thought Jeff Passan's piece in ESPN yesterday was a revelation. It was really smart. And just got into the nuances of why, the realities of why, the politics of Major League Baseball, and that if you want a salary cap, or at least the odds of it, because it's unlikely to increase, and that will cost you a lockout. There is no, don't be under any illusion. To get to a salary cap, there's a lot of pain you got to go through, if you get there. That pain's no guarantee, but it's required for a salary cap to happen. that's what you want. You got to root for the Dodgers because this ridiculous level of domination and hell, if they win next year too, they win back to back to back. Major League Baseball's owners, who are already, according to Passan, frustrated with a lack of spending and parity by some of these teams, might put their foot down. The problem with a salary cap is that's nuanced too. You can't do a salary cap and not force the Pirates and other teams to spend a minimum. And so I'm saying yes to a salary cap, just to be clear, only with a floor. And that will lose you certainly votes in Pittsburgh, right, from the owner. So it's very complicated. If, on the other hand, you don't care, you don't want a lockout is the biggest problem on earth, status quo is great, let's keep it rolling, then root for the Brewers. And they have to come back from a 2-0 deficit, and they lost those first two games in Milwaukee, as you know. That is a difficult task that you still have to root for. That's still the thing that you need. Because then it is easy for people to say, especially those pushing for, we don't want a lockout, guys, and what do you mean? The Dodgers lost to the Brewers. Number one salary versus number 17, it's fine. Ryan, did Jeff Passan sway you at all in who you will be rooting for in this NLCS? And good morning.
Good morning, Bill, and no.
Okay.
No, wow. It did not. I like the free market. I don't think punishing teams for trying to win for me is the right move. I guess
who do you root for? Just remind me who you're a fan of.
That's fan. So look,
yeah,
I mean, that's
yeah.
All
you should root.
Right? We all have to be.
You
fair
should root
for
the Brewers.
You're a Cubs fan and are rooting for a system that would, in theory, hurt the Cubs more than help
it would.
Them. I give
it
you
would,
credit.
Yeah.
You're a better man than I. I will not
Thank
do
you.
That. I finally have a rich owner. I want to be able to enjoy that.
That's fair. That would be such a Mets thing. We got one, and then 2 years later, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter, right? The thing is, I guess I am. You definitely opened my eyes in terms of, like, thinking about it, because I was rooting for the Dodgers. I don't hate them. I respect them. So it's like, you know what? You want to spend, you want to try to win. Like, I'm not going to sit here and chastise you for it. But it is funny, if I root for the Dodgers and I'm right, per se, at least rooting for them in the series, it could be to my detriment, which is definitely ironic.
It really could be. I mean, I've said this, and I'm sorry if the repetition is boring or annoying. Back in another life, I worked for AM 570, which is one of the two giant local stations in LA, and the Dodgers bought them, and in buying them launched a new show to talk a lot of Dodgers baseball, and they hired me. I got hired. It was a big career moment because of the Dodgers. So, and then I liked the Dodgers. I liked interacting with them. Oral Hershiser used to listen to the show and call in and tell me I was an idiot all the time. We'd have players on. I got to know some of them. We'd do shows from Dodger Stadium. So I'm not a fan per se, but I feel like I have had 2 years of my life really enmeshed with that organization. I like them. I told the story once. I went to a spring training game and just snuck into a suite because I thought it was just open, and it was Andrew Friedman's suite, and he couldn't have been nicer. I like the Dodgers. I would normally root for them. I root for good people. I like the organization. I'm out on it. Okay, I want to do, before I run out of time, I know you have a great start bench cut. I don't want to infringe on that. Can I give you some? I have a therapy thing for you, and it could be good radio.
Oh, okay.
All right. So this thing called, it's not really called a Truman letter. I just call it a Truman letter. Harry, is it S. Truman? As in super good at history? Harry Truman, who was the president of the United States a long time ago, would write these letters that he would never send, these missives to Joe McCarthy and various political enemies and a critic who criticized his daughter, and he just would put them in his desk and never send them. And I had to write one of these yesterday involving a school. And I actually may send it. Harry was smart. Harry would just put it in his desk and not send it. I may say it was an email, not a letter. I was thinking for you, it might. Well, there's two things. There's a therapeutic end of this, and there's a selfish end of it. The therapeutic end for you, and I'm being serious because it felt so good to sort of get this off my chest involving someone who's been awful to one of my kids. I think you should write a letter to James Franklin, like an email. You know, it'd have to be by hand.
Interesting.
Everything he's done to you.
He has caused a lot of embarrassment. I have looked very bad in front of many friends, many years, and saying, this is the year they're going to break through. I've made myself sound foolish on the radio many times for believing this is the year. So, interesting. Okay.
And then secondarily,
okay,
we could do a dramatic reading of it at some point with some poignant music, right? And just get it off your chest.
That would be interesting.
If the Cubs hadn't won the World Series in 2016, I would take my own idea and write it to Moises Alou for making poor Bartman the... That's a long time ago. That's 22 years, right? 22 years ago? It wasn't Bartman... I think Bartman's in hiding. Does he still live in England? Dear Moises Alou, the problem is I couldn't read the words I would write on the radio. Dear Dusty Baker, for destroying some arms, you know? Dear Doc Rivers. Hello, Chris Paul. It's me, your friend Bill Ryder.
Hello, LeBron James.
I just think maybe writing a Truman letter would be good for you. That's where my head's at.
I'm very interested. Now, I will say some of the anger has gone since he's been fired. Maybe I could just redirect towards the Mets because they're still there, and they've really upset me many years.
You're still mad. If you had to pinpoint, because Harry S., don't know if it's an S. Truman. It'd be funny if it's Harry Dietrich. I don't know. Why am I going with the middle name? I don't even know it. Just skip it, writer. Harry Truman would write a lot of letters, apparently, that he didn't send. They found him in his desk when he passed away. You could write a few. But you like their owner. Who are you going to direct it to?
Well, probably a lot of the players.
I see.
Just the pitching staff stinks. Pitching coach would get a letter for sure. The manager would get a letter for sure. Just letting these guys just no heart.
Sure.
I think if I went to Francisco Lindor, I like him, but leadership was maybe not there.
You're
going to
get
end.
Him. You might want to keep your ink dry for Daniel Jones. Just I wouldn't.
One foot's in the air. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop with him. So far, so good.
All right. Now just give me a little sports therapy help here on the show.
That is a good idea. That maybe I will take you up on.
I'm being serious, though. I got a situation I got to deal with as a parent, which happens, right? And I was thinking about it, and I just went and wrote it yesterday. I wrote this email. It's long. It's 1,000 words. And it was – I'm not sure if I'm going to send it, but it was so therapeutic. I go, this is why Truman did these letters. That's why Harry A. Truman did – Harry L. Truman did these letters.
Harry A. B. C. Truman.
Dear Bill, my middle name is this, you moron. Anyway, I was thinking of you. And you told me, and I'm not making this up. I used to say it with your predecessor because, frankly, he needed some encouragement. But you actually told me you think this is – how did you describe Start Bench Cut?
Maybe the best I've ever done. Historically great.
That's right. You said historically great. I'm really excited. All right. We have a historically great Start Bench Cut in which apparently I am going to be emotionally torn with the difficult questions that will be posed to me. And you get to hear that. You get to hear me struggle after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And Bill, this Sports Flash is sponsored by Prize Picks. Football's heating up and basketball's back, so download the Prize Picks app and use code PRIMETIME to get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. It was the first postseason complete game in 8 Octobers, but it did not start well.
Jackson Churio digs in, and the first pitch of the bottom of the first inning on the way, and a fly ball into right. This has hit a ton. It is back. It is out of here. First pitch of the ball game. It's 1-0 Milwaukee.
That's Jeff Levering on Brewers Radio, but Yoshinobu Yamamoto allowed no more runs, just two more hits, going the distance for LA in a 5-1 win in Milwaukee for a 2-0 lead in the NLCS. After two wins in Toronto, the Mariners now host game 3 of the ALCS. First pitch is 5:08 Pacific, and U.S. men's soccer with a 2-1 win over Australia in a friendly in Colorado last night, but Christian Pulisic left in the first half with a right hamstring issue. Further evaluation once he is back with AC Milan. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
This is Bill Ryder with a Sports Minute. I'm not sure if the Chicago Bears' white knuckle of a win, that's terrible. I suck. That's the minute. I'm Bill Ryder.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
That was funny. I knew yesterday, if you're listening, we do Sports Minutes, which I love. It is the highlight of my day. And but I screw them up sometimes, obviously, as you heard there. And Ryan very kindly is an exit. If you ever wonder why I give these guys a hard time, there it is. It's outtakes. Rather than you, the outtakes.
So it makes the show funny, I think.
I think there was one you did where you had to bleep it out, right? Wasn't there an outtake where I swore?
You did. And then there's another outtake that I will admit I did insert a curse. I thought it would sound funny. You did not curse, but
you
made it sound like you did, which I think added some humor to it. So, yeah, you know, just kind of bringing everyone behind the curtain of what really goes on here on the show, which is just chaos.
Dig it. I like it. Now, if you're listening on the podcast, you don't get the music, but you do get all that magic, right? The rejoins are on there?
That is correct. You hear the rejoins.
Look at you. Look at Ryan Hickey crushing it. All right, you've set a high standard. I haven't looked, so I can be surprised. Let's all venture into what Ryan claims is a historic start bench cut.
It's Start Bench Cut on Writer Than You.
Start heavy hitter here. I'm going to play something for you to set it up here, provide a little context. So yesterday, okay, Jerry Jones was discussing the Cowboys and why he still believes they have a chance to come back. They're 2-3-1. And one of the areas when he's talking about his defense that he feels really good about is their pass rush. Take a listen.
Where we're potentially our strongest is pass rush. And we've got the most capable pass rushers that we've had. And we've got the ability to really rotate our players, which is very important in pass rush because that's probably, you exert more energy there than any place else.
As a reminder, right, the Cowboys did trade Micah Parsons, so he's no longer part of that pass rush Jerry's talking about. And so far through six games, the Cowboys are 24th in the NFL to 32 in sacks. Not very good. So, Bill, I say that to say this. Start bench cut. The most delusional people in sports.
Oh, wow.
Jerry Jones.
Okay.
Kendrick Perkins, who said a lot of things, including that he, if he was playing today's NBA, would lock up Nikola Jokic and put the clamps on him. And WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert, who, if you remember, said Caitlin Clark basically should be on her hands and knees thanking Kathy because if it wasn't for the WNBA, wow, their platform, she would have, Caitlin, that is, no sponsorship opportunities.
This question is brutal. I want all of them to start. I want them all to be in the start bench cut delusional hall of fame as a starter.
That's why we're trying to make it historic. Make it tough.
Yeah, they're an all conference, all decade, all century starter. Of delusion. Woo! Okay.
And I know I provided three examples. You feel free. Kendrick Perkins said a lot of things. Kathy Engelbert's done and said a lot of things.
Hard.
Like, it's not just these three examples. You can use the entire... I mean, Jerry Jones said a million things that make no sense. The full body work here is available for you to take into consideration.
You're just giving us the news that resulted in the latest example to influence and inspire this start bench cut question. I'm with you. I'm going to go first instincts, and I can't even explain why. I'm going to start Kendrick Perkins.
I can't. I don't think I could argue. That's insane. Yeah, we put the clamps on Jokic. Okay, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, it's... But in fairness, he doesn't own ESPN. They put him on by choice. So I almost let it, you know. Next up on the delusion rankings, I'm gonna bench Jerry, and I'm going to cut Engel. I tried to come up with a good name, but it would have been really disrespectful. Engelbert. Because... while she's been awful, her awfulness, or at least our awareness of it, is a smaller sample size. So she's going to grow into this if she really wants to supplant the two other people above her in the delusional rankings. Very good start to your historic question.
Okay, let's go positive here, Bill. Bench cut the biggest surprises in the NFL so far through the first 6 weeks.
Ooh, nice.
Is it the 5-1 Colts?
Okay.
Is it the 4-1 Steelers?
Okay.
Or the 4-2 Jacksonville Jaguars. Also, I don't know why I said or there, like you're choosing one. Just that's the order, but you get the question.
No, I'm with you. All right, I'm going to cut the Steelers because while they're a surprise, I'm not as surprised. Mike Tomlin is their coach. They are a perennial winning team, and Aaron Rodgers is obviously capable of being very talented. So it's surprising, but not as surprising. I will... honestly, I'm going to start the Colts, man, because at their quarter, look at you, at their quarterback position, Colts fan Ryan Hickey, I would not have suspected that was going to work particularly effectively. And even if it had, I would have thought 3-2, like, oh, that's a cute little story that'll fall apart. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think if the season ended today, they would have the bye.
They would have. They currently hold the number one seed in the AFC. Just to be all,
it's crazy.
Them and the Buccaneers, two top seeds in each conference.
The Bucs are the other one, yeah. And I'll put the Jags in the middle. It is surprising. Young GM who looks like he's 11, new head coach, a quarterback whom we always thought we'd be able to get where he's supposed to go, like you could sort of go, okay, there's a reset here. Maybe it can work. Excellent question.
Let's hopefully go 3 for 3. I want to set it up here, a little more context. I'm going to play this. This is from Lane Kiffin's press conference yesterday. Ole Miss getting set to take on Georgia this week in a big matchup. And the question Lane Kiffin answers has nothing to do with what's going on the field.
Off the wall question, you and Kirby, two most, probably some of the more demonstrative coaches on the field. Who do you think burns more calories in a game, you or him?
I don't know. That's a good question. I walked by the TV and saw his press conference today, so it looked like he's burned too many calories.
Shots fired there, by
the way. Wow.
Again. So, start bench cut, Bill. Wow. These college football coaches, you would pick to win a Royal Rumble, if you will. Three in the octagon, one walks out. We'll say Kirby Smart. We'll go with Brett Bielema. And we'll say Mario Cristobal of Miami here as well. Those three men walk in. Who's walking out?
Who's the last one?
Mario Cristobal of Miami, along with Brett Bielema of Illinois. And we'll go with crazy man Kirby Smart, who's very demonstrative and I feel like has a lot of pent-up rage in him as well, as the more statured guy, but maybe can provide.
I'm going Mario as a winner. He just looks like he's a fighter, doesn't he?
He's a house.
And not a fake tough guy.
He's like that death stare where he doesn't say a lot, but like he just gives you that look of like, don't do it, buddy.
Man, that's Bielema fair. Versus. So I've got Bielema left versus Kirby?
Yes, sir. Brett Bielema seems like a joyous guy. He's a bigger guy, obviously, but he seems like he's, he can get serious if need be, but also have a good time. Kirby just seems like he's all business 24/7, ready to rip someone's head off.
Big dudes like that, you can't tell. It can go either way. They can be soft or they can be ferocious with their
rage,
physical advantage. Yeah, their rage and their. I'm gonna go Kirby. I'm gonna go Kirby next.
Okay.
And let Brett sort of sit on the sidelines, but I'm not sure. I would fly to Vegas to see that, UFC 321, the coaches special.
Credit to Lane too for talking some big smack there, and
that was very funny.
He's hilarious.
He is very. Would you agree he's a jerk though? Right, he's a jerk.
I mean, yeah. To kind of go with it, yes.
Part of the
because that was an innocent question. You could have joked around. Oh, we're both two high energetic guys, and he goes, "Look at this fatso they are." So
right,
very quick.
And the thing about that is, it's implied in the response. Lane's in pretty good shape, dude. I mean, Lane looks like an athlete. He's tall. He's taller than I thought. I don't know why I thought he was. He's really tall.
Like Gumby.
How tall would you have guessed Lane Kiffin was just from a distance if I hadn't said that?
I guess, I don't know, like 6'1", 6'2". Like, he does look tall, but he doesn't look overbearing in part because he's, standing.
He's got to be 6'4", He's got to be 6'4", dude. Maybe he's 6'3". He's tall, dude.
It's like the NBA, right? Steph Curry doesn't look tall because he's next to all tall guys.
Right.
But when he's next to a normal person, he's a tall guy.
Right.
That's where I feel like Lane.
I just Googled it. Says 6'3", which is tall.
Which is tall.
But I could go 6'4". I saw him and I was, he lives around here when he's not insulting fat coaches.
You have to crank your neck up to look all the way up at how tall he was?
I sure did. He definitely looked down at me. he looked down at me if he's sitting in a chair. And I don't mean literally. I mean figuratively.
Start bench cut, Bill. The NFL teams that have been a bigger surprise so far this season in a negative way.
Oh, okay.
The 0-6 Jets, who we both were optimistic about. The Miami Dolphins at 1-5. And the Houston Texans, who started off 0-3.
Yeah, they're 2-3, right? They're 2-3.
They're so getting hot.
All right, so I'm gonna cut the Texans because they have a chance for a little bit of a salvage of the season. And I know they were, what were they last year, 10-7? They still kind of came back to earth, right? They weren't, people thought last year they were going to be what the Commanders ended up being in the NFC. So contenders, a young upstart, maybe don't make the Super Bowl, but close. Supposed to lose the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. So I think they're on that trajectory already. Boy, it's a good question. I'm going to start the Dolphins, man. I mean, if they had gone 8-9, I think that would have been disappointing in Miami, right? That would have been, the wheels have come off. Tua's throwing people under the bus. the head coach who was celebrated by me 18 months ago is backtracking. I think it's fine. I'm back. I'm just kidding. I didn't see him. Hi. Oh, wow. My whole stoner thing's not as cool now. My impression. Like, it's just, yeah, it's bad.
It is
best
bad. Player,
best player's mind. Injured, obviously, for the year. Yeah. And then I'll put the Jets in the middle. I mean, I thought the Jets were going to be good, so they were in competition. But they're the Jets. In retrospect, we should have all seen that coming.
That is true. Start Bench Cut, the best Halloween-specific food items.
Okay.
Orange Oreo cookies.
Yep. My son ate a bunch of those yesterday.
Ooh, I got some too yesterday. They're good. They're so good. By far the best Oreo. We'll say generally Halloween candy. You can pick your favorite. And we'll go pumpkin bread as well.
Well, you didn't know what to do, huh? You were really confused on the third one.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut pumpkin bread. I'm going to cut this question just for you going pumpkin bread.
Damn.
Pumpkin bread?
It's Halloween specific. People like pumpkin in like October only.
What does Halloween candy mean? You couldn't like...
Well, what am I say? You want to say the Star Bench got the best? I'll say that for when we get closer to Halloween.
I think you're going to... Okay.
Because some people say this. Some people are not big candy people. So whether it's Reese's, Skittles, whatever, like just generally they're not candy people. So they're not going to like, I'm excited for Halloween. I don't know if you're a candy guy or not.
I love candy. But there's a big difference between just regular candy you get at Halloween and then the Halloween-specific candy, the little pumpkins, the little candy corns.
Well, save that for when we get closer to Halloween.
Fair. I'm going to start orange Oreo cookies because they're amazing.
They are.
They don't taste any different either. They're just orange.
See, you're right, but they also feel like they're is that for you the best Oreo flavor? Much. Agreed.
Just original is the best.
Oh, you'll take original over orange.
But they taste the same. There's no flavor difference.
Yes, but there's a difference.
To answer your question, I think that the mint are the best.
Okay, maybe I should have done Start Bench Cut best Oreos. Okay.
Are really good.
Mint is very
but
good.
But the regular Oreo, you give me a gallon of milk and a bag of Oreos, and I'll show you why I had to lose 21 pounds the last 3 months.
You can't have just one Oreo, that is for sure.
No, I very truly cannot. And that's why when I eat Oreos, I have to avoid Lane Kiffin.
Hey, fatso.
It's real. It's real.
Really fast here. Start Bench Cut. NFL Week 7 games you are least interested in.
Okay.
Panthers, Jets, Dolphins, Browns. And we'll go Steelers, Bengals.
All right, so I'm gonna start at the bottom. I'm gonna cut Panthers, Jets. I'm gonna, other than you bringing it up just now, I'm gonna pretend it doesn't exist. I'm going to put in the middle bench Dolphins, Browns, and I will start Steelers, Bengals, especially after Tomlin talks some smack about sort of that whole dynamic there. That was a really good start. Historic? I don't know. I have to raise the stakes a little bit, just like we do when we have guests on, like Tony Gwynn Jr. next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let's keep the baseball talk going with Tony Gwynn Jr., longtime former major leaguer, Padres radio color analyst, co-host of Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan in San Diego, where our friend Adam Klug, who just won my fantasy baseball league again, is the program director and friend of the show. Tony Gwynn Jr., is Adam walking around even more cockily than he usually does? Because I'm tired of this guy and his victories in fantasy baseball. It's obnoxious.
Now, so I have your league to blame for the moxie he's walking around with these days. It doesn't help that the Atlanta Falcons got a victory, so he's back on that bandwagon as well. So, yeah, he's feeling pretty good about himself these days.
The good news, Tony, is he is an Atlanta sports fan, and all things will eventually just come crumbling for him and put him in his place. Tony, I don't know if you saw this. I'm going to just sort of recap this for you. I thought Jeff Passan, obviously great MLB insider over at ESPN, had an interesting story yesterday that posited, but was reported, the idea that if the Dodgers are able to win the World Series this year, finish off the Brewers, are obviously up 2-0 right now in the series, that it will lend some credence to owners who want a salary cap and may eventually lead to a lockout in 2027. Whereas if somehow the Brewers could come back, could win this series, could find a way to get it done, it would lend weight to those voices who say, no, we're fine, there's parity, it doesn't matter what the Dodgers or some other team spend. Do you buy that? Do you buy the idea that the outcome of the NLCS could have some bearing, perhaps, on the politics of the CBA when it expires in a year and 2 or 3 months from now?
It's a great question, Bill. And before I answer, I want to preface it by saying, you know, for myself, I've been raised in a household of from a player perspective, really my entire life, you know, whether it was watching my dad go through the strike, whether it was my own career, that is kind of the perspective I've always kind of seen. And so for me, I'm positive that there's some credence with what Jeff is reporting. He's usually spot on with these things, but I don't know that I would lean as heavily into it. You know, I think owners have wanted the salary cap since I was a baby. And players have, the baseball unit specifically has been strong in how they have united against it. And I don't think that's going to change. I think regardless of whether the Dodgers end up winning or not, the owners are still going to want that salary cap. And it's just going to be one of those things that I think they have kind of circled as kind of being able to push on the why they need one. When the reality is, I mean, the Dodgers would be the first back-to-back champions since the Yankees in the early 2000s. It just doesn't happen in our game very often. But there's certainly some fixes that need to happen. I don't think the salary cap necessarily does that. I think that is kind of the easy way to go about things. But ultimately, the owners have an issue with being able to balance their own checkbook, is what it seems like in most cases.
Tony Gwynn Jr. hanging out here on the show. Tony, let me dive into this a little bit. And I really appreciate your candor, and it's a good point. Your perspective, how you grew up, your viewpoint is really interesting. Let's say that in basically 27, right? I think it's December 1, 26, yeah, where the CBA expires, but 27 season. There is enough consternation. There's enough distance between the Players Association and the owners that we're talking about a lockout. Maybe we see one. And the owners do push for a salary cap. I see it differently. I would be okay with that, but only if there were a salary floor and a high one.
Yeah.
See, my thing is, do I want the Dodgers spending $500 million and getting MVPs every other year? Probably not, but whatever. Fine, good for you and Andrew Friedman, so good at his job. I'm more focused on, I want to see the Royals be able to maintain what they built 10 years ago. I want the Pirates to be forced to surround the generational pitcher with talent. Is there a world where a floor and a stark enough one is, A, possible for owners who don't want to do that, and B, would be enough for players to say, all right, we'll accept a cap if there's a floor that meets our standards?
It's so convoluted with all of it, right? And I think the thing that no one talks about is that fact there that you're bringing up, the floor. I don't think the owners want that. They don't want that.
Right.
Most of the owners don't want that. And when you start to look at how the game is kind of laid out, right, I think you got your haves, you have your have-nots, and then you have everybody in the middle. And I think what we're seeing is you got a few that spend, you know, quite a bit and probably more than I think that people are comfortable with. But you have way more that don't spend enough and could be helping their teams win, a la the Pittsburgh Pirates, a la, you know, whatever team you want to throw in there. And I think there's more of that than there are the overspenders. Yet we focus on the overspenders as if they win all the time, and the reality is they don't. And so is there a way that happens? I think that's where the complicated piece comes in for the owners, because certainly – if there is any light in trying to get players to take a salary cap, that will certainly be the first ask that you have. You know what else has to happen when you have a salary cap? Everybody has to open their books. That has historically been something that the owners have not wanted to do. And so once you open them up and everybody has an idea of where everybody's at, then you can start to have a real negotiation. I haven't seen it to this point. There is no evidence to lead me to believe that that will be the case. And I think that's why ultimately a salary cap will be hard to come by.
It's a great point. And I know that you're right. These things are nuanced. I mean, take the Padres team for which you're an analyst and you talk about on the radio every day. That is not a big market, but they are big spenders, right? I think they're ninth this year in payroll. I mean, they are committed.
Yeah.
So I know that these things are complicated. And you can also have big markets where the owners are cheap as hell and don't want to spend money. So I know these things are sort of hard to break down into black and white. What is black and white is that the Dodgers are extremely well run. they do spend a lot of money. And I like the Dodgers. I mean, probably more than you do. I mean, I don't mind them, right? I find them to be a classy organization, and the product is really good, and I live in L.A., so I get to watch a lot of Dodgers games.
Right.
What is – I know it might be different if, you know, for everyone else. Look, this is – the stats are mind-boggling. I mean, their last 30 starts, right, going back to the regular season, but obviously including this postseason run – Dodger starters are 15-1. They have a sub 1.5 earned run average. Their whip is 0.81. Dodger starters have struck out 214 players in those 30 starts. I mean, it's just like, what is the recipe? Is it as simple as try to get to the bullpen and hope starters stop throwing 8-9 inning gems? What is the recipe if you're the Brewers at this stage, or if we're giving up the ghost on Milwaukee's chances down 2-0 coming back to LA, if you're the Mariners or the Blue Jays? How do you beat these guys?
I mean, you got to – I mean, for the Dodgers, you know, typically, you know, I think in the past it's been get the starter out so we can get to the bullpen. And then it shifted, right? It shifted to, man, let's jump on these starters because when the bullpen comes in, it may get a lot tougher. The Dodgers are built – and you can see this by the way the signings went during the offseason and the guys they brought in. They brought in a bunch of bullpen guys. They brought in, obviously – you know, you have a guy like Blake Snell that kind of fortify the front end of your rotation with Yamamoto. And it, at least in the beginning, it didn't seem like it was working out because those guys were hurt. But they managed it well. These guys got healthy, like, right at the right time. Blake Snell was almost impossible to hit the other night. And then Yamamoto said, here, hold my beer. I'll one-up you with a CG the following day. And so I think you got to try to get to the starters. And, you know, the playoffs is largely about can you execute your game plan. Yamamoto last night was running that sinker in off the plate. He got a lot of swings at pitches outside the zone. The split was so good that it was just hard to lay off. And listen, when you got guys who are on top of it like that, it's just going to be a long night no matter what. And do you have the pitching to go inning for inning with them? You know, at least the last two nights, the Brewers, you know, although they gave a great effort, just came up short.
I mean, they got four hits, right? I mean, they have four hits in two games. It reminds me of the Harry Doyle Major League, you know, four hits. We've got four bleeping hits, but it's two games, not one, Harry Doyle.
I would love to see how the conversation changes. You know, we've been seeing this bullpen kind of rise to the forefront in the postseason. Dodgers are like, let's go old school. We're going to run our starter out there for eight as long as we can get him to go. And a lot of that's because their bullpen is struggling, but when you got two starters like that that can go the distance, it's definitely a benefit. And I think for the Brewers, they're going to have to, and listen, it's easier said than I get it, but it is the job at hand. They got to find a way to execute, stay in the zone, because those type of pitchers, when you're chasing outside the zone, it just becomes a much more difficult task.
Tony Gwynn Jr. hanging out here on the show. I want to go micro and macro. Let me go micro. The other night, we had a game where a player could have, with the bases loaded, easier said than done, basically allowed a ball to hit him in the knee and sort of maybe change the outcome of a game in a series. I have not been a hitter at a Major League Baseball level. It's easy for me, and I did say this, Tony, so judge me, you should, to say when I played traveling Little League team, I'd lean into it with my shoulder. What is this guy doing? What is the proper evaluation of those kind of moments?
You know, ironically, most of the people saying this have never stood in the box at that level. And their natural reaction for anything, especially, listen, if had this pitch been above the waist, a lot easier to get your brain to kind of throw your elbow in there, Artic. But when it's thrown in the lower extremities, we're talking ankle, foot area, your natural tendency is to get out the way. And you could tell even as, I mean, who was that ended? It was Terang. Even as Bryce stepped out of the box, you could see in his face, like, he's like, dang, if I could have just stayed in there and let that hit me, we have a tie ball game. But, you know, you can't control what the body it does a lot of times, especially when you're talking the velocity that these guys are seeing. I know it was a breaking ball, but it was still in the high 80s that ball whipped in there. And so, you know, I just think that if he had it to do over again, he knew that was coming. He could have told himself and convinced himself to stay there. But, man, he's also trying to get ready for 97-plus sinking or in, whatever it may be, and you just got to be ready to hit. You can't be up there thinking about getting hit by a pitch. Now, listen, as I said, granted, if he had it to do over again, he probably would have convinced himself, this pitch is coming, I'm going to lay my leg in there. But I can't be fault a guy for getting out of the way on just a human reaction that he had.
That's such a great answer. And by the way, Tony, every Friday on this show, last segment we do, I pick a bum of the week, and then someone that wins can be bum of the year. I'm going to nominate myself for pretending just because I hit 541 in some random Chicago baseball league, I'm an expert on poor terrain. I'm doing it. I'm nominating myself. You're not wrong, and I will judge myself. Tony Gwynn Jr. here on the show. All right, big picture here, and I'm going back a few weeks now, but I really want your perspective. This new model in baseball, get more teams in, but obviously there are teams that sit. We entered this postseason. I entered this postseason. The sort of small but interesting sample size was the teams that get through the best of three, and it feels like a coin flip, have this major momentum advantage, and it's a disadvantage to the teams that sort of win this slog in this marathon. Not so this year, other than what the Dodgers, the teams that were the bye teams, were fine and are still playing baseball. How do we feel? How do you feel? How do you evaluate this postseason format now that we've got another almost sort of season postseason behind us under this approach?
Yeah, I don't think you can still evaluate it. And this is the tough part for all of us, right? Especially in today's day of information and how fast it comes and always looking to make things better. The reality is we had years and years and years of the postseason format we had prior. And I'm not talking about the one-game playoff, because that one was very short-lived, but prior to that. And so we had a good feel for how these work. The reality is this is, what, year four of this format? And there's just not enough data yet to be able to make assumptions on how it's going to go. We thought for sure, as you said, coming into this year, man, buys were bad. You didn't want to buy. You wanted to be the team that won that wild card series because you had all this momentum. That has turned out to just be completely flat on his head, not true. And so, you know, at least this year. And so I think we got to have a 10, 15 year kind of sample size to really understand what the benefits are, what it's not, before you can make a change. Now, we may not have that time. If the collective bargaining agreement may come up, they may change it again, especially with multiple teams rumored to be coming into the league. And so, I don't know that we're ever going to get the answer that we're looking for in terms of, is it the right way or is it not? It may not last long enough for it, but whatever the format is next time, if it changes, we'll have to wait 10, 15 years before we actually know the benefits or, you know, the non-benefits of it. I right now, it's fine the way it is. Let's let this play out longer so we can really get an understanding of it. And if, you know, that time comes and we have an understanding and we don't like it, then the players don't like it, they can possibly look to change it again.
All right, Tony, we started this conversation, which I've really enjoyed. It's always amazing having you on, talking about the Dodgers. They seem to just yawn every year and win the NL West almost every year at a minimum, going back a decade or more. Let's flip to the other side of that equation, a Mariners organization that has not, needless to say, had massive levels of postseason success. There's a lot of baseball to go. As a Cubs fan, I know when history is against you, no lead is safe. And I'm not disrespecting the Blue Jays, but Seattle is very close to a World Series appearance. You get to a World Series, anything can happen. What would it mean for the Mariners? What would be the significance if they're able to win, what, six more baseball games and be World Series champions?
I mean, I guess it kind of pours cold water on the idea that, you know, small market teams or a team that doesn't spend the most can't win. I don't know where the Mariners are at in terms of their payroll, but I would imagine they're not in the top 10. And
I think they're 12. Yeah,
they're
12,
right 13. Below it. So yeah. So they're outside of the top 10. I think that's probably a win for those who think that this outcome could have an effect on how the negotiations go after the 2026 season. So I think personally, I would love to see it. I would love to see Milwaukee get it. These are two teams that haven't won a title. It would take one off the list that the Padres are on right now, which isn't necessarily great, but I think it's good for baseball. Every time we see, you mentioned it earlier, the Royals or a team that we haven't seen get this far and certainly has had to do it without the means, I think it's a positive. It continues to show that you don't have to have the most money to go out and win and compete. And listen, their organization kind of mirrors what the Padres do. AJ Preller and Seattle's, you know, it was the GM there for the Mariners? Slipping my mind right now, but
Jared Decoto?
DePoto, yeah. They both are kind of cut from the same cloth. They're willing and dealing. They're always looking to make changes. Sometimes it seems to make sense, sometimes it doesn't, but here he has that ball club 2 wins away from getting to the World Series, and I think that would be tremendous for baseball.
Tony Gwynn Jr., amazing conversation. I love the nuance and the perspective. Tell Adam Klug to just bring it down a couple levels, and thanks for being on the show, pal.
No problem, Bill. Thanks for having me, brother.
All right, you'll be good. Tony Gwynn Jr. hanging out here on the program. That guy's great. What a great interview. Really like the perspective. And look, I'm willing to learn something. I didn't realize that being good at baseball when I was 12 does not qualify me to criticize poor Terang. It's a good point. Like Tony, I like Tony's nuance, and I hadn't thought of it this way. If that poor dude had just been able to, if he knew it was coming, he probably would have been like, "Oh, stick your knee into it." There is a human body reaction to things, right? Just the natural inclination. And the knee, the ankle, that'll hurt, Ryan.
Can I get really like, you know, just let's just go psychoanalytic or
somatic?
Psychology.
Totally different.
Where we're going. Yes.
Psychology. Okay, yeah, you can go psychology.
If he was willing to get hit, is that maybe not what you want from a batter? Or does he have so much belief in himself that says, I don't need to get hit, I want to get a hit?
That's not psycho.
If you're
silly.
Looking to get hit or looking
that's
for
psycho
a walk,
silly.
You're afraid of the moment.
The bases are loaded. A base on ball, a hit by pitch is the same thing. What do you mean? No.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, I'd rather have my hitter up there saying, I'm going to get this down with my bat versus, oh, man, I pray to God he throws 4 balls or please hit me because I have no chance. That's what I'm just trying
to
say.
No one is saying that he was praying for 4 balls. It's just there was an opportunity to take a base and tie the game because the bases were loaded.
We've seen, like, plenty of batters in different situations. Like, you could tell they don't want to swing the bat. They want to look for a walk. Right? There are plenty of guys that are out there.
I'm going to nominate you for Bum of the Week.
I'm serious. There are guys that are like, please hit me. I don't feel great. I'm coming through. I'm looking for a walk, trying to get lucky.
That's not what we're talking about. It's bases loaded, end of the game, 2 outs, approaching a full count, strikeout, and on ball 4, by the way. And before that, there's a pitch that's basically in on him, and if he just takes it, tie game. He's not up.
But I'm saying, okay, it's natural, right? So, like, in order to
I know
not
what you're
do
saying.
What he did, you have to
don't.
Tell yourself, don't. Hey,
don't
if the pitch
it.
Is close. Yeah. I'm not going to, like, that's almost like something you tell yourself in the on-deck circle. Hey, if he's going to hit me, like, I better make sure, like, I'm not moving.
By ourselves is going to be better than this conversation. I promise.
It will be. Worse.
It will be. And it's happening next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I'm Bill Ryder, the Sports Minute. Bill Ryder's the best. Let's go, America!
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Oh, it's an outtakes Wednesday. Good stuff. I got a lot of notes from an angry Titus McClendon. I'm reading these. I don't know. He doesn't want baseball to have a salary cap, I think is what I'm seeing. One of his points is the Mets are number one in payroll. They're not. They're second, I think, right? They're second?
They're number two. They paid a lot of money to a lot of people.
It didn't work, but my counter is they're the Mets. I mean, it's, you know, you got to be smart as well as rich in baseball. So
that is true. Yeah. Got to have your players play.
Part of the issue. Let's do any more theories about psychology? No, just kidding. Let's not. Let's do buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Actually, if you want to really dive deep. No? Okay. I'll save that for another day, another time. Instead, Bill, let's start with some baseball, both in the NL and ALCS. The home team, when it combined 0-4. As the Mariners and Dodgers head home with 2 wins, or being just 2 wins away, I should say, from the World Series. Now, whether it's in the LCS or World Series, 93 teams have gone up 2-0, with 78 of those teams winning the series. So 15 teams have been able to come back from 0-2, but just three of those 15 teams down 0-2 did so while having home field advantage, like the Blue Jays do, or did, and like the Brewers did. Buy or sell, either the Brewers or Blue Jays can push their respective series bill to 6 games.
Oh, you know what? I'll buy. One of them can. Win tonight. Momentum's a crazy, crazy thing. And buy or sell my theory. I have a theory about baseball. I think it's situational. There's a couple exceptions based on some peculiarities of how the ballparks are built. But generally speaking, I think that Major League Baseball's home field advantage is the least important of any of the major sports.
Bye.
I'm not saying it's not somewhat significant sometimes, but it's not the same thing as, oh man, we got to go to Kansas City or Seattle for a conference championship game, or oh my gosh, we got to go to the Garden tonight for Game 7. This is brutal. I also think officials are much more impacted by crowd noise, and the crowd noise isn't the same at Major League Baseball parks. It's just not.
No, it is not. You're very right about that. For the most part, the weather is not really a factor, whereas football, right, home field advantage, depending on where you are. You mentioned Kansas City, Green Bay.
Yep.
Big factor.
Right. Green Bay. Yep. I mean, if you're, I don't know why I'm bringing up the Cardinals and the Dolphins because they're bad, but if they were good, if you're those teams, sometimes you build yourself to, and you're accustomed to playing outside in relatively good weather, right? You're not, dome teams are more used to that than the non-dome teams. The Saints are a good example. I've been to some games there that were really significant. Doesn't mean that it doesn't matter. I just think it's a very different thing in baseball. And I think one team wins one of these games tonight, tomorrow night, yeah, we're good to go.
So yesterday, but we played Mike Tomlin out of character, publicly criticizing the Browns yesterday for trading Joe Flacco, who was their opening day starter, to a division rival in the Bengals. Well, yesterday, Kevin Stefanski had the opportunity to respond to what his fellow head coach said. Take a listen to Kevin Stefanski's response.
Your thoughts on what he had to say about that, and the fact that he was so taken aback, just like you acknowledged last week. You were a little surprised as well in not anticipating that you guys would trade Joe this season.
Yeah, I don't have a comment on that, Daryl.
Short and sweet. Buy or sell. This was the right answer from Kevin Stefanski.
Bye. And the right question from Daryl.
Bye.
Yeah. Because my guess is that Kevin Stefanski's actual answer is, ugh, what is my boss doing? And, ugh, what is my colleague doing talking about our business? And he probably wanted to avoid criticizing both his GM and Mike Tomlin.
Can I ask you this really fast? I did see this from some people on Twitter, granted. Do you think he's, in a way, by not defending his GM, as Mike Tomlin taking a shot at him, in a way, indirectly, undercutting his own GM?
Yeah, but I think, he's not going to lie, and he's made it clear he wanted Flacco to stay. And I think there's a lot, my suspicion, and I don't think I'm out on a limb here, is that he doesn't want Shedeur Sanders on that team. So he's already got some conflict with the people that are making decisions. And by the way, the GM probably doesn't want Shedeur Sanders there either. That's probably an ownership situation. So I don't think he's throwing the guy under the bus so much as navigating a difficult situation. Buy or sell, I can rename the Steelers head coach. Don't give him the Mike Tomlin.
Bye.
I hope Mike Tomlin starts just speaking out of character now. Speaking out of turn.
Goes full heel turn, full Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, that'd be good. See the influence. Maybe a small drip.
Little
and
influence.
Drips.
You are who you spend your time with, right?
Seemingly spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, they do.
Speaking of which, they do play a game tomorrow night. Steelers at the Bengals. And as Cam Hayward jokingly said yesterday, it is the Icy Hot Bowl. And that is because, Bill, Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco will be the two starting quarterbacks. Both are either at or over the age of 40, which will mean it's just the second time in NFL history we will see both starting quarterbacks be at least 40 years old. First time, only other time it happened, back in 2020 between Tom Brady and Drew Brees. By or sell, you're intrigued to watch two old heads battle out on the field.
So,
Sell.
In Cleveland, he became no Flacco. So I'm not particularly interested in watching that poor guy stumble and bumble. Now, if it turns out the Steelers can lose the game and it's a close game and that's happening, I will reverse my decision. I will feel differently.
But right now, Sal, no intrigue. Okay.
Between the quarterbacks? I mean, here's the thing. In order to be intrigued, I have to be intrigued by Joe Flacco. Sell that I am interested in watching Joe Flacco play football.
Sell.
I'm not.
Okay. All right, that's fine. I can't disagree.
Buy or sell, if nothing changes, Joe Flacco will have had a better career than Lamar Jackson if Lamar never wins Super Bowl.
Sell.
I disagree.
I can't say that.
I know it's crazy. What if Lamar gets another MVP, is a three-time MVP and never makes a Super Bowl?
It would be very disappointing, for sure. He would be Dan Marino, but Dan Marino's still respected. It's like
Joe Flacco did not win that Super Bowl despite himself.
Right.
And I'm doing this from memory, so I might be wrong, but I believe in that run, he had 12 touchdowns and no interceptions.
And the game in Denver, right? He had that throw. Right. Like, he played really, really. Yes, he played really well.
He was the opposite of Peyton Manning when Manning won his first Super Bowl.
Yes, yeah, you are correct. And really, yeah, honestly, both Super Bowls. Let's be honest here. The second
both. You're right.
More carried than he was the first
time. You're right. So I'm not disrespecting Flacco. I'm not sure what my answer to that question is. I think it's possible it's a better career. My point is, I'm not disrespecting Flacco. I'm not sure Flacco belongs out there any more than Drew Brees belongs out there, right? At a certain point, you're too old to play at a level that you used to.
Forget just where they rank career-wise. Buy or sell, if you were a quarterback, you'd rather have Joe Flacco's career than Lamar Jackson's. Lamar does not make a Super Bowl.
I'd rather have it. Buy, yeah.
Buy.
Look, these guys are never going to have to work again. Their families are going to be taken care of. It's not a question of money. And so what do you value? And I would rather win a Super Bowl. And by the way, win a Super Bowl as the reason the defense was great, but a big part of the reason you won it versus have a bunch of accolades and not be able to get the job done. And the other thing is, it's not as if Lamar Jackson was this remarkable talent and his team wasn't very good. They had really good football teams in the years that he failed to. His MVP seasons, those were good football teams. Not just him. I mean, he was a big part of it. And he didn't succeed. That's his deal. That's his problem.
Speaking of not succeeding, Dallas Cowboys have majored in that for a long time. This season included, they are 2-3-1 so far to start the year, coming off an embarrassing loss to the Panthers. Despite that, owner Jerry Jones still as optimistic as could be, Bills. He was on with our friends 105.3 The Fan down in Dallas, and he said that the Cowboys are still in the playoff race. Now, Dallas is currently third in the NFC East, 13th in the NFC, heading into their matchup Sunday at home against the Commanders. Buy or sell, the Dallas Cowboys are still capable of making the playoffs.
Sell. You know why?
Sell.
They weren't capable of making the playoffs when they were 0-0.
You can't make it at 0-0. You're not going to make it at 2-3-1.
I mean, my answer was going to be that when they were 0-0.
I thought you were going to say because they had Matt Eberflus on the coaching staff, which honestly could also be a fair critique as well.
Matt Eberflus is not. It's interesting. Matt Eberflus has been losing. Who go figure. He's not Matt Eberwin.
Caleb Williams' best game of his career came against Matt Eberflus' defense. Coincidence? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence. And by the way, Matt Eberflus, if he is able to scheme for anyone on earth, it should be Caleb Williams.
The guy you know his strengths and definitely
you know
weaknesses.
Him is, right. Right.
Oh, boy. How about this, Bill?
Buy or sell, if Matt Eberflus or his family were driving around right now, and this was the first time they heard it, they would in any way chuckle at Matt Eberflus.
Sell.
Yeah. I think the Eberflus family will appreciate the Eberflus name.
I agree.
In basketball, how about this? The Celtics every year have a local put together a basketball game for local media members. But this year, instead of that, just media members playing on media members, head coach Joe Mazzulla scheduled where the media members will play against the Boston Celtics coaching staff. The final score was 57-4.
It's terrible.
I'll let you guess who won and who had the four. By yourself, if you were in this game, you could score a bucket if you played against an NBA coaching staff.
Okay, let me ask you, that's a great question. You know, I have a bet that I've never done that I would play Gary Payton to 11 by ones, and all I'd have to do is score one basket. We never did it.
You also have a bet, right, with Andy Roddick that you could beat him playing tennis. He has, what, a frying pan?
Frying pan. I have
a lot of sports bets out there.
They're all hiding from me.
That's it. Gary Payton's scared.
He's scared. Gary told me, he's like, Billy boy, I like you, but if we do this, I will hurt you. And I believed him. Let me ask you a question. So when I made this bet with Gary, it was 10 years ago. I used to play a lot of hoops, a lot of basketball. I don't play basketball now. Can I have a year to get back into basketball shape and hope I don't get hurt? Can I, or is it just today? Because my answer will differ. If it's today, sell that I can score.
Sell.
If it's 10 years ago, or I sort of get back into playing hoops, 100% buy.
Buy.
100%.
Yeah, I have no doubt. I have no doubt that I will beat Andy in that bet. That one is for sure. And I have zero doubt that I would. The thing is, GP is 10 years older too, so it probably is a little easier for me than it was 10 years ago. How old is Gary Payton now? Is he 60?
Let's see. I got to look it up. Probably close to it. Which could work. Yeah. The longer you
wait, it would work in my favor. Yeah.
The better it'd be. He is 57.
So he's 10 years older than me. I get 11 shots, right? Man, when I was 37 and he was 47, he might have destroyed me. I get 11 shots. So if nothing, is he going to play up on me? Because
yes.
I think I can go around him. Do you think he's going to play up on me?
He's 1,000,000%. He's not giving you any open luck.
He's on me.
He's on you. He is like literally living up to the glove nickname like it was 1995.
I'm checking the ball as far back as I can. I'll go three quarters court every time if I have to just to create some space.
I don't know if that's going to work out well for you. Will your answer change? I'm going to just read you some of the Celtics assistant coaches. I'm assuming most, if not all, played in the game.
All right.
Joe Mazzulla, I saw, played.
Right.
You got Sam Cassell, I'm assuming he's playing.
That's a problem.
Emil Jefferson, most of these staffs, right, for the most part, have former players or guys that played in college, have been around the game for a while. You still feel good? We're just saying one, not win, just a bucket. The Boston media members scored two buckets in this game.
I believe in me.
Okay.
I'm a me supporter.
You are a you guy. Okay. You know what? Believe in yourself, because if you don't, who else will?
Is my team going to help me? That's the other thing. Are they going to get me the rock in the right situations?
Sure. Yeah. We're going to assume like we're playing a normal flow. I don't know. Are you two or point guard? We're playing a normal flow of basketball.
I'm in. I can do it.
All right. Let's make it happen.
All right. Well, is that it? That's it. That's the questions.
Those are the questions.
You don't want to make Anderson any longer? Man, you can't go no context for our colleagues?
I want to make sure there's context in there to see how you would play against the Celtics.
In fairness, I can't see what's going on because I'm in L.A. So this is on you. Wow.
My apologies.
Right. It's okay. I forgive you. I have a live programming alert question for Ryan Hickey that is a critically important one that we'll get into after a sports flash from Andrew Bogish.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
Bill, this update sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Only 3 of 28 teams to lose the first two games of a best-of-7 at home have recovered to win that series. That's the history the Brewers are now facing after last night's 5-1 loss to the Dodgers. Manager Pat Murphy, as optimistic as possible.
I don't think it's over. I don't know why. I admire this team. I've said it all along. I like who they are. I know where they came from. And I don't think they'll be surprised if they come back and play really well.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto pitched the first postseason complete game since 2017 last night, allowing basically nothing after a leadoff homer. Christian Pulisic hurt his right hamstring in the first half of U.S. men's soccer's 2-1 win over Australia in Colorado last night. We'll get a full prognosis once he is back in Italy with AC Milan. And two-time World Cup champion Kristen Press is retiring from pro soccer at the end of this NWSL season. I'm Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Writer with you here on the program. Thank you for listening. This Thursday night football preview is sponsored by Square. More than 4 million neighborhood businesses run on Square. To learn more, go to square.com or just stop by your local favorite business. See you in the neighborhood, Square. This Thursday night, the spotlight will be on the AFC North, and we talked about this a few minutes ago. As the Cincinnati Bengals host the Pittsburgh Steelers, Joe Flacco threw 2 touchdowns in his Bengals debut against the Packers on Sunday, while the Steelers head into this game as 5.5-point road favorites after a very impressive start to the season. You know what else is impressive? A live programming alert. Jim Donovan.
Live programming alert.
So my high school buddies and I, my buddies Ken, Ross, and Ryan, who I've seen Ken a lot in the last 20 years. I've seen the other two guys maybe 2 or 3 times. We're going to New York City, a little guy trip next week. Now, I'm going to be working while I'm going to still be doing the show. They want to come in to the studio, and they want to be on the air on Friday next week. What does that look like? And should I, well, he listen. Maybe he won't make it this far. Ken listens to a lot of the shows, but he listens to the podcast version on the free Odyssey app, by the way. Should I make him bum of the week if he's just sitting there?
I was actually going to say, if you want to bring him on the air, what if you allow them, now you still choose, it's your show, but maybe give them the opportunity to name a bum of the week each.
They can each nominate somebody.
Each nominate someone, whoever the hell they want, sports, non-sports, one of your friends, you, themselves, whatever, their wife, whatever they want, and just see where it goes.
Whoever if they nominate me, they're bum of the week. And if someone else nominates the other one, then they're bum.
To be a fun game.
All right.
I'm intrigued.
We'll do a little Dubuque High School Class of 96 edition. It's not Dubuque High School. It's Wallard High School. I don't even know what high school I went to. It's Wallard High School in Dubuque, Iowa. Okay.
Is it also 96, or did you make that up too?
No, that part's real.
Okay.
I think so. Go back. Class of something, something. Class of 90-something. Yeah, it's 96. Golden Eagles.
Okay. So am I.
Catholic school.
Very nice.
Eagles wings. And I will raise you up on Eagles wings. Yeah. Let's go. Let's get it done. You really went long on the buy or sell there. How does Andrew feel about that? Because I'm not there to see. Is he pretty chill about it?
To be honest, I lost track of time myself.
Okay.
So I was not looking at him. Clearly not looking at the clock. Really until about 30 seconds before I went to the update, I said, oh, wow, it is late. And I still had another question. That's what I was like, maybe we're done here. So I
wonder,
know.
You think I can pitch to the bosses a bonus show? We have to get paid for it or not. I will. You can do it free. A bonus show where every week on Friday we do a show of all the topics we just didn't get to, we said we would. For example, Drew Brees' quarterback theory. Haven't done that yet. Aaron Rodgers is LeBron James. We still have time. Might do that tomorrow. But haven't done that yet if we don't get to it. Ryan Hickey explains the psychology of why guys don't want to help their teams win. Unfortunately, we got to that, but there was some meat left on that rancid bone.
Bonus Bill podcast.
A little after hours bonus edition.
And because we're not on the radio, we don't have to adhere to a clock. We can go as late as we want.
Because you and I are going to be looking for do 5-hour podcast on Friday.
On a Friday afternoon. Let's do
after
it.
After the show. What time do you leave on Friday? You sneak out early? I don't tell anybody. You can tell me.
I do not sneak out early. I earn my time.
Yeah, you do.
I'm an honest person. I don't like cheating the system because eventually you're going to get caught. So if I leave early every day.
Do we? Do they? Is there?
I like to think they do. To make myself feel better about doing the right thing.
Is Joe Flacco going to be capable of helping the Bengals stay at 500 over the time that. I think the answer is no.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I think the answer is no.
2 years ago, and 2 years is a long time when you're now 40, right? When you're in your late 30s, early 40s. 2 years ago, he went into Cleveland, and he was remarkable in what he was able to do in not just keeping that team afloat, but making them look like a contender. So, again, this isn't an anti-Flacco thing. It is Joe Flacco is no longer young enough to be effective. And Flacco was really, really good. He wasn't Aaron Rodgers. If Aaron Rodgers can push the boundaries a little bit longer, if Tom Brady did push the boundaries a lot longer, some of that is connected to their natural level of excellence. You know, 60% of all-time great is still pretty good. 60% Joe Flacco of being, like, really impressive career is not, you know, it's not, it doesn't come out, the math doesn't come out the same. I'd like to see the Bengals play well. I think it would be interesting. I'd love to have one of the storylines be, wow, Cincinnati is sort of in the mix for a final playoff spot, and Joe football, Joe Burrow, Joe Cool's coming back in a couple weeks. This is December, right? And this could be really exciting. I'm highly skeptical that's going to be the case. These are the kind of games you have to win, because this is you're at home, it's a short week, that's a big advantage, and you're playing a team you're not supposed to beat. The Steelers being 5.5-point favorites on the road is such a juicy. Maybe we'll get Nick Costos on soon, hang out with Nick. I would almost bet on Cincinnati, but it's like, I don't trust a quarterback.
Joe is good, I think, due for a game or two that's pretty good, but 2 months of good Joe Flacco is tough.
As you said, do you think psychologically he won't want to win because he'll want to win himself, and he won't want to find, you know, he won't want to hand the ball off because he wants to do it himself?
That could be absolutely.
Did I follow that right?
Yeah.
All right. Tony Gwynn Jr. made me nominate for Bum of the Week. I will honor that in a couple days. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Tony. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. He did a great job. I'm Bill Ryder. We appreciate you. See you back here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.